In the colder months, the valleys surrounding Athene Magical College are not often completely snowed in, but they do get storms, sudden, chilly. And there are some plants that can only be gathered when there are a few inches of snow on the ground, magical blooms that push up briefly and only in places of high concentration, often with some element of flame baked into the ground. That's why near the mountain where the various dragon sisters make their home, there is a patch of such plants that is routinely farmed at colder times. Such as now. Up there with a few other students and one instructor looking over it all, you're wearing suitably warm clothing and just carrying a satchel, picking up the red glowing blooms that push through, melting the snow in a few places. When you pick them up, even through your gloves, you feel the radiating heat and reassurance, and you tuck them away into a satchel that will preserve them until they can be brought to the greenhouses for transplant, replication, and later use at the college. You walk around, enjoying the small scavenger hunt, moving fallen branches with a dusting of snow on them, and finding underneath the small red shoots of the plants, which you pull up. They snap satisfyingly away from the ground, and you tuck them into the satchel. Others are doing the same, spread out on a large grid, and in the center of the area, watching over everything and making sure no one picks the wrong plant or eats any or steals any from what are, after all, university lands. In the center of the grid that you're all picking from, there is a woman standing on a hill wearing a very thick parka, her svelte, muscled form underneath is complemented by a good foot of padding. The parka she's wearing is far, far from appropriate for the small amount of chill and the couple inches of snow. Then again, there's a dragon underneath, scaled and glowing, and there's a melted circle in the snow around her, but she's just humming to herself, comfortable. Blood-red scales, occasionally her forked tongue flicking out, tasting the cool air, or, during the light snow showers, lancing a flake from the air, swallowing. You see her eyes glowing under the hood, and her arms are folded, one hand tucked into the opposite furry sleeve on each side, forming a comfortable muff in front of her. And she turns now and then, checking what you're all doing. And perhaps because she's not engrossed in picking plants, it isn't long before the dragon instructor calls out, "Everyone, pack up. The storm's about." Yep, there it is. And the winds pick up. Chilled. More than just a few flakes now, driving sheets of snow. You close your satchel and head to the middle of the area. A few other students, a cat girl you noticed in the corridors. A harpy, a recent transfer student with her wings folded down over her light jacket. They all meet up, and the blood-scaled dragon girl asks, "So, where does everybody live?" She seems a little dubious. The other two point out that, yeah, they just live toward the base of the mountain. So, nodding, you and the instructor take their satchels, and they set out. You live a little further out, so it doesn't take long for the dragon to scoop one parka-covered arm around your shoulders and lead you toward a cave you can see glistening on a nearby wall of the cliff face. You didn't think it was there before, but that doesn't seem to ever matter up here. The dragons can always find a way into the interlacing network of tunnels that is their cave. You're not sure if there are 9 or 12, but coming and going from the mountain, and frequently sighted at the college, her and her sisters have been up here for a little while now. The door she leads you toward, for there is a door lodged in the cave mouth, is stone and slides aside when she places one clawed and scaled hand on it. Inside, you see hooks for the jackets, and she quickly walks over, in through the door. The moment you step in, you notice that the chill from outside, and from the snow that you're brushing and shaking off your shoulders, that was clinging to you, threatening to chill you both, and the contents of your satchels, which are only rated to preserve to a certain temperature. But the moment you step inside, the snow just melts away. There's a stark divide between the warm, almost heady air inside, perfumed with incense. You see hanging bunches of herbs just inside the door, too. Between in there and the cold outside, something keeping it perfectly warm and toasty within. When you step in, you see her stripping off her parka, revealing underneath a black crop top, a pair of shorts, and that she wasn't really wearing shoes, but had only been projecting that illusion to avoid scrutiny. The top is almost flat against her chest, but what she lacks in breasts, the instructor makes up for with a bountiful rear. She leans against the wall and cracks her knuckles in front of her. Go ahead and put those down. She points at a shelf just inside the door, a general kind of junk drawer, clearing space. You see there are documents there, a few other satchels of different herbs that must have been gathered at other times. You recognize some that can only be picked at midnight. Crystals, an orb or two, and what looks to be gold coins. Careful not to disturb anything, you find the only empty place on the shelf, and drop all three satchels there neatly. Then you turn. Well, come on, get out of those. You're gonna boil if you wear those any deeper. She points further into the tunnel where, past a red glow, you see there's a kind of swelter in the air. So you strip off your outdoor gear, leaving you just in your comfortable clothes. And you follow after. She has her hands in the back pockets of her shorts, and is walking, nonchalant, elbows akimbo, long, dark fall of hair, swept back ram horns. You know she doesn't quite look like the other dragon girls, but you're certainly not going to ask. You follow. Her tail, now liberated from the parka, swishes behind her. Her scaled, clawed feet don't quite seem to ever touch the ground. In the rooms beyond, and yes, it does warm up, not to a swelter, and you're glad you shucked your outdoor gear. You see there's a television plugged into a wall in the living room. You see there's a big couch off to one side. The whole place is open concept. There's a bathtub that could easily accommodate 10 people in a room that doesn't really have anything else. In fact, you're pretty sure that to brush your teeth at the sink in there, you'd have to stand in the tub. But everyone has different priorities. And past it all, there's a bed. It's a queen bed pushed right into the corner of a room. And there are enough pillows on it that when she walks over to it, for she is leading the way to there, she has to just push half of them off to even sit on it. They fall to the floor in an otherwise neat room. There's a closed closet. A huge bookshelf, a computer in the corner somewhere, with junk all around. You see that there's even a window that looks outside, but it's pulled down at the shutters, blinded over and curtained. You look at her inquiringly. You thought you were just going to sit on the couch, maybe wait for the storm to clear. You could call for someone to come up and help get you down. There are minders at the university for when magical weather gets bad, and they never mind helping people get out, but you're not sure you could do it entirely on your own. There are things that wait for storms so they can pounce. But she's sitting on the edge of the bed. No, this thing's gonna whip up in about a minute or two, and I don't think my enchantment's gonna hold. That sounds strange, so you inquire. Yeah, those herbs we picked? They absorb all fire-aspected magic. I can feel them draining the battery in this place. That means they're gonna stay fine, but I'm not gonna risk having to deal with Spruce if I don't show up with tomorrow's herbs, so you're gonna get in bed here. We're gonna get warm. Okay? And then she pulls back a truly huge down comforter. You notice there's a heavy-weighted blanket folded in one corner of the bed, but it's not in use right now. She slides down under the comforter, pushes herself as far back on the bed as possible, and welcomes you to the side nearest the middle of the room. Come on. She's holding up the comforter. You can strip down, I won't judge, if that's what you're wondering. From the way she's laying down, you see that her tail has actually coiled around one of her legs. That must be to keep it from whipping when she's sleeping. You wondered about that. You walk over toward the bed, and, following her instructions, consider whether you're going to strip or not. Before climbing in, the mattress is very soft. You sink into it. There's a silken undersheet, and a cloth one that goes above and is just beneath the comforter. And when you climb into it, you notice that there are two or three pillows at the foot of the bed under it, and three at the head, and three more right behind her against the wall. "Hey, don't judge me," she says. But the moment you're on, she lets the comforter drop over you. And that's when the lights go out. In the whole place, there had been this kind of faint orangey-pink glow, like a salt lamp, coming from the rock itself. But then a moment later, everything fades. You're left in pitch blackness, except for the red glow of her eyes. You can see her very white teeth illuminated, smiling. And then she just buries her face against your shoulder, wraps her arms around you and her legs. She's quite soft, for all you know, her musculature is prominent, and the scales. But the scales are, each of them, downy, feathery, soft. And when she rubs against you, the warmth that she always carries with her does spread into you, which is important because in the darkness of that space, it is getting chillier and chillier outside the blankets. You can feel it on the back of your neck a little, but one of her hands runs up and lightly brushes down the back of your neck, and something, a residue of her, remains in all the places she cuddles, snuggles, presses, pushes. Because you are quite warm and snug under the blanket, regardless of the fact that the rest of her apartment here in the cave seems to be filling with an unnatural, almost crackling ice. Perhaps a side effect of the herbs in those pouches, in the presence of the storm. And you do hear it whistling and whooshing. There must be some kind of vent or tunnel to the outside allowing you to hear the whooshing, streaming of the air. "It's only gonna last for a little while," she whispers right next to your ear. And then she pushes herself against you. Through her thin clothing, you can feel the outline of her body, but you're mostly just focused on the fact that it's incredibly warm under the blanket and comforting at the same time. You adjust, laying your head back on the pillows, and let her do what she's doing, which is to wrap her legs around yours, nestle her head on your shoulder, and just radiate warmth into you. "I admit I kind of wanted to snuggle too," she explains. "I'm sure I could have sent those herbs into a pocket space or something." She yawns. A protracted, lazy yawn. You feel the silkenness of her hair against your cheek. You wrap your arms around her, too, running your fingers down her back. You feel the place where her wings fold away. You know they can vary in size, but mostly she was folding them away to keep the parka on and just left them that way. Still, you run your fingers over the spot where they would unfold, down her back, and just hug her to you, wrapping your arms, no longer running your palms or fingertips over her, just wrapping your arms around her and pulling her to you. She nuzzles her head against your shoulder, your chest, in a very familiar way. There's nothing shy or doubtful. She seems to just do what she wants to. "Hey, my turn to be Little Spoon." She turns and faces the wall, rotating in your grip. And then you are facing against her back, your nose pressed into the top of her head, buried in her dark hair, your arms wrapped around. She interlaces her long, nimble fingers with yours, holding hands, pushing her butt back against your lap, twining her legs with yours. She's breathing quite slow, and the heat that was radiating out the front of her when she was hugging you is even more intense when you're against her back, feeling its broad surface move in and out, breathing in and out. Comforter above you both, And somehow, it isn't sweltering, it's still comfortable. The two of you, twined together, in her bed. You breathe in, there's something sweet like incense in the air in here, though it's become quite dark, and the red of her eyes that you could almost see by a moment ago has dimmed as she let them close. I'll take you to the school after we're done, she explains. From there, you can probably catch a bus into town. Or if you're not too far out, I can maybe just fly you over. She pushes back, making sure to make you cuddle as close to her body as you can get, and you're happy to do so. Wrapping one of your legs up over top of her, holding her to you. Both of you breathing in unison. In the warmth of that place, with the cold outside the blankets just occasionally tickling your ears. You know it has spread through this whole underground burrow, this complex. You know that outside of here, outside of this space, there will be other things to do at some point. But in the slowness of her breathing, the way you're twined together, the way she's enthusiastically finding ways to twine her body a little nearer to you, second by second. Both of you on that impossibly soft surface, laying, now in companionable silence. You're in no rush to get anywhere else, or do anything else. You can just breathe comfortable, cherishing the way that she's present, that her weight is there between your arms. You're wrapped around her form. And if you inhale deeply, she'll mirror the motion that you can just burrow your face into the back of her head, that you can just run your hands over her arms or hold her tight to you. That the way she's scrunched against you, balled up a little bit like that, still radiates heat out into you. Equalizing the two of you till you do feel sleepy, drowsy, comfortably warm against her, breathing in and out, in and out, a companionable silence that is warm and spreading, a state from which you know you could fall asleep and all that would happen is you'd wake up later. Probably to her, yawning and rising from the same situation. It's a comfortable place. There's nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. Just here to exist in. For now. For a time. For long enough to get your thoughts in order. To feel her body. Commit the memory of it to your head. And know that sometimes it is this simple. Sometimes it's as easy as just getting in the bed, holding someone close, relaxing for a little while, and you'll remember the feel, her soft scales against you. You'll remember the feel of her nearby, the soft pneumatic pressure of, oh, she is breathing in and out, a steady, reassuring way, metering out time, ticking off the minutes. Of the two of you intertwined in heat beneath the comforter. The two of you on a soft, yielding surface. And she all too happy to change places now and then. To have you face the other way. While she nestles against you from behind, perhaps. The two of you together. There in that timeless space for a little while. Snuggling, cuddling, cherishing each other's company for a bit. Just the two of you, while outside, the cooler air, the storm that rages, has no purchase in this place. This bedroom beneath this comforter, on this bed, the two of you intertwined, snuggling, cuddling, changing places, growing more comfortable with one another, body and mind, and with the idea of spending time, unproblematically, comfortably, in physical contact with another. Enjoying everything you are learning about her body, its softness, how she intertwines, how she likes it when you push your face into her hair or let her just climb atop you under the blankets and lay on you, snoozing, the almost cat-like nature of some of her motions, in the way that there's a little bit of regret in her voice when eventually she says that the storm is letting up, and the two of you can head out.